Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Show tapes live some Thursdays on our YouTube channel, ANN Zach. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to ANCAST. I'm Zach Birchie. We got a special show today. It's an interview episode. Some friends of mine, we've had one of them on the show before a couple of years ago from Seven Seas Entertainment. You also know them as Go Manga on Twitter. Joining me today, it's Lisa Patillo. She is the production manager at Seven Seas. Lisa, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, no problem. And joining us for the first time, the freshly minted marketing manager at Seven Seas, Leanne Centaur. Leanne, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You have a long history in manga publishing.
Yeah, I think this is my 19th year.
Your 19th year.
Yeah.
You got two on me. I'm on 18 this year. 17 this year. 17 or 18. So you got one or two on me.
Yeah. 1999 was my first year in the early days of Tokyo Pop.
And you were involved in Tokyo Pop in the early, early days.
Yeah. This is kind of an old story. I feel like I've told it many times, but I wrote the Sailor Moon children's novelizations for them back in the late 90s. And at the time, I was still in high school. So they kind of got me young, and I never really left. Like, once you kind of get a lifer in, it was hard for them to get rid of me.
Yeah, right. Once you get a chance to work with the thing you really love, you're like, I'm never leaving.
Yeah, and at that point, they'd also, they really expanded their manga department. Because, I mean, Tokyo Pop wasn't, they were doing the magazine in 1999, like, mixed zine and stuff. And they had just kind of expanded their manga, just their production in general. And they were looking for rewriters. And I was like, please.
Yeah.
Which it might have been literally that because I was a child at the time. So
yeah, sure.
Yeah,
that's fun. And so now you're at Seven Seas handling all of their marketing.
Yes. Well, I'm the marketing manager. Obviously, marketing is kind of a group effort.
Right. But it's your job to market stuff.
I'm the first line of defense when people have complaints. Yes.
Okay. All right. That's your job.
Yes.
So the last couple of years,
social media and stuff.
I feel like when we talked to you in 2016. That was kind of right before you had like a bunch of success. I mean, things were going well at the time, but like now it seems like things are going very well. And I don't know if like, what do you attribute it to? Like luck? Do you think it's just, we're getting lucky with these licenses, or do you credit your savvy? Cause personally, I would credit the savvy of someone like Lisa or Adam with picking good licenses. Right? Like, y'all just picked good stuff. But what do you attribute it to? Because you've had plenty of success.
Lisa, you want to go first on
this one? Yeah, Lisa, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I guess I'll go first, as I was here back in
2016.
I mean, in 2016, things were going really well for Seven Seas. And I think kind of the manga market in general, everyone's feeling a lot more stable than we have been in the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And that kind of just gave us, as a publisher, sort of the, I guess, a bit of a safety net to kind of go forward on maybe some more risky titles or experimental titles, or maybe ones that, you know, even 2 or 3 years ago, we would have been like, you know, can't bet on that, too risky.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, since we kind of like having all the staff of Seven Seas involved, we all put in when we have license ideas or suggestions, and things kind of leave where we are today. Once you have a lot of different minds coming together and everybody gets to kind of pick something that they're really passionate about, you get some surprises and a lot of different titles.
So, like, which ones would you say were risks?
Well, I mean, the one that I'm sure will come up and does come up frequently is something like My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness, which... At the time we got it, I don't think we really thought it was a risk, per se, but it was definitely very different.
Yeah.
It was something like at the time, you know, it hadn't been scanlated. No one was talking about it, but we saw the cover. And I'm sure you've seen the cover. Once you see that, you're like, whoa, okay, what's this?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we looked into it, and then, you know, we a couple of us read some of it, and we're like, wow, this is really powerful stuff, and this feels like the perfect time. Like, the audience growing up reading manga and comics would be really, like, this would really impact them.
And it was.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was huge. The moment we announced it, it kind of just coincided with it already getting a little bit of popularity online.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest is history.
That's really cool. So the risks turned out to just kind of, hopefully fund another round of risks like that one.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we don't like to necessarily call them all risks. I mean, you're a business. You need to do what you at least feel will at bare minimum pay itself off.
Yeah.
While also being something that we enjoy working on. So it's got to be something we care about. And yes, you know, business, you want it to do well. But I like to think those titles are no longer a risk per se, but we're still pretty careful.
So has your perspective changed on what you consider a risk after the success of something like that? Sounds like, yeah.
Lisa. I think it varies person to person, but when I think risk now, I mean, I think in the climate of manga publishing right now, the biggest risks are long titles.
Well, I feel like maybe that's been true for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, you get the Shonen Jump titles maybe that can last 45 plus and still do pretty well, but yeah, yeah. I'd say
yeah.
Series, but we're seeing a lot more really popular series that are very short or like one book, and that kind of stuff is great. I would consider more low risk.
Right, the single volume and one or one to three volumes maybe is sort of like the low commitment.
Yeah, and we still, you know, we obviously get some longer ones, but we don't want to have, you know, three dozen series that could go up to 20, 30 volumes.
Oof. Yeah. I mean, does the opportunity exist to license a lot of material like that?
Long stuff or short stuff?
Long stuff.
I mean, yeah, there's like... I mean, something like Shonen Jump titles, which go on sometimes forever.
Yeah.
They're really kind of in their own class. You know, Shonen Jump is circulation of millions of copies every week, the magazine itself. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of titles that are just, you know, they're popular in Japan. They happen to kind of go in a magazine where, you know, there was a stable readership, and so the author could kind of continue, you know, the manga could keep going for a while. We look at a lot of different publishers now, like, as people have noticed, we're licensing from a lot of different publishers.
Yeah, that was my next line of questioning.
Yeah. So there are tons of options out there for things that kind of all over the spectrum in terms of audience length, you know, the art style too. Like,
right.
An example, like Go For It Nakamura, which was another title that, similar to my lesbian experience with Loneliness, the minute we announced it on Twitter, it exploded. Like, when we talk about lesbian experience with loneliness doing well on social media, like Lisa was saying, it was, you know, kind of exploded. The reaction is like, we'll get 10 times the number of like retweets or impressions than our second biggest license. Like, that's how big my lesbian experience loneliness is. It was like, way past kind of, we were like, whoa, what is this? This thing has like real power to it. And thankfully since then we've seen other books that have that kind of viral power to them. And Go For It Nakamura was another one that was huge on Twitter. And that one has kind of like a retro 80s style to it. And it's our first official boys love. So just stuff that very new places for us to go and stuff even in Japan that feels new and fresh or old fashioned, but in a modern way. There's just kind of a lot out there, and it's really exciting that we can look at the whole landscape of what's coming out right now and really have a shot of bringing over kind of anything, which is why we run those reader surveys on our website every month, because a lot of people are constantly requesting licenses from us on social media. And although we really love hearing about people's passion, it's very hard to quantify people yelling at you on three different social medias about various titles. It just, as you know, social media doesn't archive really well. Sometimes you just get kind of the same two people saying it over and over and over again. And it's like, was this something a lot of people were asking, or was the same two people? It's just a little bit like figuring out what the actual word on the street was with that. But we started running these surveys, I think last April, and we do them more or less monthly and give people up to 3 licenses that they can suggest. And now we have beautiful spreadsheets of people typing in the correct name, you know, formally submitting a suggestion.
Yeah.
And so now it's so much easier for us to go through and really see what people are excited about, because it's cataloged and very hard to catalog off of social media. So shout out to people who take those reader surveys. They are so helpful. Thank you so much.
Well, that's very cool. The idea that you can pretty much just pick and choose from wherever you want is very exciting. And, you know, the next thing I was going to ask you about was, like, so your main competition in the manga space right now in the U.S. are 3 enormous publishers that are owned mostly by Japanese publishing companies. So your competition is Yen, which is partially owned by Kadokawa, Viz, which is partially owned by Shueisha, or completely owned by Shueisha Shogakukan, I think, and Kodansha Comics, right there in the name. Do you license titles from all 3 of these publishers? Right?
Yeah. Yes, right, Lisa?
Yep, all of them.
Yeah, okay. I was like, I think so, but I don't want to, like...
So tell us how that works. Because I think the average manga fan will probably be like, well, Viz is going to release all of Shueisha's content. Kodansha is going to release all of Kodansha's content. Like, that, I think that's kind of how it's seen. So tell us a little bit how that process works. Like, how would Seven Seas go about releasing a Kadokawa title?
Well, unfortunately, we can't really talk about the details of the licensing process.
But in general.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why, you know, having a company in Japan would not necessarily want to publish their entire backlist with one company.
Right.
I don't know what their individual incentives are, because, again, it's private and, like, you know, they make their own decisions on their end. This is relatively new for us, being able to have basically to be able to license from so many different publishers. Not every single one, because I know that some people, when they ask a lot about licenses, and I know sometimes people get really frustrated. They're like, oh, this is really popular. I really ask for it. You know, why isn't it getting licensed? There are a million factors that go into whether or not we publish something. So it's very complicated. But I think a lot of this can really be credited to the way that the manga industry in the West has developed over time, mm-hmm. and how things are different now than they were. Like Lisa was saying, even just a few years ago, the market here is different. Digital is a much bigger component than it was for years. You couldn't really get legal digital manga, or like it was very kind of slim pickings. The actual audience in the West is different from what it used to be. People have grown up. Like now you have people who were raised on manga whose kids are reading manga, yeah. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also just like a global audience as well. Now when you have places like, I mean, quite frankly, Amazon, the fact that Amazon will ship English language manga all over the globe, that's new, right?
Yeah.
So everything kind of has been evolving over time. And this is sort of what the current reality is. And in many ways, we just had to kind of adjust as things change, but there's this whole new world out there now, which has made the last couple of years so exciting. Things that we even said on record in the past, oh, we can't do this, we can't do that. And some people have asked, you know, why did you say you would never do a boy's love? Why did you say you would never license from this company? And the answer is things change.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, right. Yeah, totally.
And I can comment a bit further on us licensing from different publishers. I mean, like Leanne said, we've been licensing at Seven Seas from different publishers for years, but the big ones that people kind of note, you know, the Kodansha, Shogakukan, Shueisha, those are newer. And a big part of that is, you know, it's obviously up to the Japanese licensor, their decisions, and that one, there's so much backlist now. One company in the U.S. can't release it all.
Yeah.
It's a logistics thing. And also, at this point, so many of these companies have been around for so long, like over 10 years for all of us big ones left now, you kind of have a feeling of what types of titles certain publishers will put out. Mm-hmm. And some just aren't either appropriate, or they're just not for the audience that companies have really cultivated, like really put their focus on. So I sort of feel like that's the area where Seven Seas kind of comes in, and we're like, hey, you know, we can kind of do anything. And, you know, I think that a lot of different creators and publishers kind of like having choices. And we just kind of came in at the right time to offer that.
Yeah, totally. So I guess I got to ask, like, some of this stuff seems like remarkably fortuitous timing. So y'all licensed Devilman, the original, and have been putting Devilman out in the last couple of months. And it just so happens that Netflix has a new Devilman out that is basically setting, it certainly set the anime world on fire and seems to have actually reached out to broader popular culture. And y'all have the original manga license, which must feel like sitting on a trunk of gold right now. so was there any dovetailing? Like, okay, we know Netflix has this. Let's snag all this Go Nagai material. Or were you always like, yo, let's publish some Go Nagai?
Lisa,
I can answer that one if you want.
Yeah, go for it.
I think, I mean, I can say we had no idea.
Yeah.
The Devilman anime. literally, what it was like I said, Seven Seas was doing pretty well, you know, a couple years ago. Things were being stable. And as we're a company of all people who love manga, literally it was just, hey, things are going pretty well. Nobody's licensed this stuff. I really want to work on it.
Yeah.
I think there's an audience for it. Let's get it. And once you get one, well, you bitch can't license just one.
Yeah.
It's Go Nagai. It's, you know, and then you want Leiji Matsumoto, so you got to get Harlock. And we, you know, the staff that really believe in these titles and love these titles, most of us grew up with these titles. And as fans of these titles and franchises, when you see things like Devilman's getting an anime, a new one with Netflix budget and everything, we were, you know, jumping for joy, both as fans and as, holy crap, that timing worked out really well. And then, you know, news of Cutie Honey getting a new anime not long after that. So, yeah, I mean, I guess a combination of faith in the original material and luck.
Right. I mean, you're also releasing Made in Abyss this month, which just had a pretty huge anime. You know, pretty much near the top of the list in most best of 2017 anime releases. Was that something that you started licensing after the anime had already been announced, or was that, how did that pan out?
I don't remember specifically, because I mean, the process of licensing can sometimes take a long time, months to years.
Yeah, right.
So although some people are like, oh, you announced something now, but you're not releasing it for another year, we could have been trying to license that for a lot longer than even the point we initially announced it.
Right.
I don't recall the specifics of Made in Abyss. I do know that, and maybe this is showing our hand a little too much, but we don't get told when anime are coming. Mm. That's not information that is passed on to us, you know, because even in Japan, manga divisions and anime are pretty different.
Yeah.
We get told, you know, people in who worked on the manga, not the creator, obviously, but, you know, might not know that an anime is coming until they see it online. I can't speak specifically to Made in Abyss, but in general, we just kind of, you know, go with what's popular in Japan, what looks like the audience here would like it. And I think a lot of the reasons that we license a manga ends up being a lot of the same reasons it would get picked up for an anime.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were at, I think we said this on the, like, at the Anime Expo panel. Our boss, Jason DeAngelis, he said, Seven Seas, we think of ourselves as treasure hunters, that we want to kind of look for maybe the overlooked titles, maybe the slightly offbeat, the stuff that's cool that maybe hasn't been, you know, isn't a super big title that everyone's heard of yet. I agree with Lisa. I can't remember the timing on Made in Abyss, but I also have to keep in mind that not all anime that come out are good.
What?
I know. So you should have asked if we were sitting down before you dropped that bomb.
Yeah. So when we hear news of an anime, we're like, oh, great. Like, that's almost always a good thing. But whether or not the anime is going to really be a great anime, be a popular anime, like, those things we don't really know usually until it kind of comes out.
Yeah.
In the case of Devilman Crybaby, when that trailer dropped, I think sometime around October, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be real good.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hang on. Everybody get online and go look at this trailer right now. Because it just kind of blew my mind. And I've seen all of Crying Baby and it, you know, blew my mind. Yeah. Just the way that Devilman Grimoire blew my mind when I was reading it for work. And I was just like, what? Oh my God. Like the kind of comic where I was winded by the time I was reading it. So, and Made in Abyss was another example of that. Like, I remember when we were looking for information on the anime, like when we were, I don't remember what process, early in the process, we couldn't figure out if it was like CGI or not. Like, there wasn't a lot of information. And then it came out and it's like, oh, excellent. This is great. So it's sometimes a very nice surprise, what the actual anime production will be. So, and we've definitely been very fortunate in that a lot of our big titles, like Made in Abyss, Devilman, and of course, Ancient Magus's Bride, like those have all had excellent animation productions, like all of them. So, and that really helped the franchise in general.
Yeah, it sounds like y'all have an operation that really just requires a lot of people who care a whole lot, paying a lot of attention to a lot of different market forces and popular opinion all at the same time, and kind of striking when you can. Would you say that's an accurate assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
You're like riding a wave, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's true with a lot of people in media.
Yes. You know, yeah. It's not that dissimilar from our job. Yeah. Not that dissimilar. So I want to talk a little bit about light novels. Y'all have expanded into light novels a bit, and now you're publishing some physical copies for J Novel Club. Which is a publisher that is handling a bunch of light novel content from Japan. And also, of course, you're licensing your own light novels. So tell us a little bit about the light novel market right now in America. What is selling? What have you had success with?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, light novels have been in English for a very long time. Back when I was at Tokyo Pop, I was working on, like, Slayers. This was at least 10 years ago, if not longer. And that wasn't even the first wave. Like, there had been light novels before that. It's definitely growing a lot. It's grown a lot in the last couple of years. And one of the big franchises that kind of pushed light novels into, like, a really big thing was Sword Art Online, right, which kind of I think everybody knows. It's a different market. Like, it's not, like, totally separate or anything, but it is kind of its own, like, market within the broader manga market, and it's growing. We have definitely had good successes with that. We really like the partnership with J Novel Club because we can see sort of what people are like. They're doing the digital version, so they can see what people are really responding to in English, because a lot of them in Japan, as you've known, like, there's a lot of like isekai and stuff, and there's, you know, really, really long titles, which is kind of like a light novel meme. So a lot of them are very like Japanese market oriented. So sometimes you bring them over and you're like, I'm not sure if this one's going to strike the same chord. But the good news is a lot of different kinds of light novels are doing well here. Isekai are obviously like big, mostly because, I don't want to say mostly because, but largely because there's so many of them, have been some really big successes, there. We also have, like, Monster Girl Doctor, which we put out last month, which is sort of a spicy Monster Girl light novel with spicy illustrations by Ziton, who worked on the a couple things, Monster Musume, I Heart Monster Girls, and a couple, you know, just part of the Monster Girl kind of artist group in Japan. So, And that was, people seemed to really like that, which was great. And we're doing, actually, just today we were talking on Twitter that we have a ton of novels coming out in February. We're doing two print editions of J Novel Club series, one of which is steampunk, one of which is isekai, Clockwork Planet and Arifureta, which is getting animated as well.
Right, yeah.
And we're also doing an early digital release of Didn't I Say to Make My Abilities Average in the Next Life? ! Which was, we're doing both the manga and the light novel of that. The light novel we're putting out in print in June, but we're doing an advanced early digital copy. And I have to say, I enjoyed that one quite a bit. I wasn't quite sure what to make of it because the premise is very hard to understand until you actually read it.
I mean, I feel like I know what it is based on the title.
You'd think
now, I work with a lot of this stuff, so it's possible that, you know, I've just seen a lot of it and therefore know what to expect. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's a little, I don't know if I want to say it's necessarily self-parodying, but it's definitely the jokes I didn't really foresee, and I found myself laughing. I thought it was charming. Cool. And then also kind of very different from these other three books. The Perfect Blue novel, Complete Metamorphosis, is coming out next month. That's not technically a light novel. There are no illustrations. We actually made a new cover for it for our edition.
Right. Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, and that comes out next month. And then that's the one, that is the book that inspired the Satoshi Kon anime movie. Right. And then we're putting out another book. Oh my God, Awaken from a Dream. Sorry. We're putting out another book, Perfect Blue, Awaken from a Dream, which is sort of a different plot mm-hmm. by the same author. And that comes out, I believe, in April. So it's kind of a lot on the... we're pushing hard on light novels now because we've seen good results and we know people really want them. Like, people are very passionate about light novels. So
that's cool.
And Record of Lotus War, of course, was the big one.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're also kind of like with our manga, we don't want to fall into necessarily publishing only one kind of light novel.
Yeah.
Because it is still fairly new. I mean, Seven Seas is one of the first publishers to get into light novels in North America. Seven mm-hmm. Seas published a few way back in its early days. Like Boogie Pop and titles like that.
Oh,
and
I remember that. Novels, yeah.
It didn't really take off back then.
Nah.
You know, it was kind of like we tried. Unfortunately, people weren't really interested. So then, you know, flash forward like this many years and, you know, okay, we're starting to see a growing market for it. So we try again.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we just kind of relaunched into it with the disappearance of Hatsune Miku.
Mm-hmm.
It was light novel. And then, you know, then we had something like Record of Lotus War. And now working with J Novel, we've got some more of the sort of better known isekai light novels, and the light novels, nice long titles. We want to make sure that, like our manga, we don't just publish one type of light novel. It's always nice to kind of see what different people are interested in. It's not all, not one light novel reader doesn't read every light novel. So
do you feel like Sword Art Online is kind of the Harry Potter of light novels in that it got a bunch of people reading light novels?
I was trying to like figure out what's considered sort of the modern light novel, what launched the modern light novel thing.
The Trojan horse of light novels.
Boogie Pop kind of did. And as Lisa said,
well, okay. I don't mean first out the gate. I mean, thing that got people to start buying them and reading them.
Yeah.
And it seems like that was Sword Art Online to me.
Yeah, I think Sword Art Online is fair to say. I mean, obviously, right. You're going to get people with different opinions, but that was always my impression.
Okay.
And I know that book sold not just really well in Japan, it sold very well over here as well.
Yeah.
And of course, it's kind of the video game isekai stuff. So, like, and most of the light novels coming out are that same genre. So, yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Like, publishers have taken, like, a few stabs at it, but never with, mm-hmm. like, wild success. And, you know, every single time, you know, they would get in touch with me about this, hey, we've got this book coming out. It's always like, hey, we don't know if you'd be interested in this at all. Like, it's very, like, apologetic. Like, oh, we're thinking about putting out, like, a book, like, with words. You know? Yeah. And you're like, oh, good luck, guys. You know?
Yeah, and the old, when I was talking earlier about the early waves of light novels with Tokyo Pop, that was around the time that I think Seven Seas was doing it too, sort of the mid-2000s. Tokyo Pop was trying to do a whole line of them, pop fiction thing.
I remember that.
And Seven Seas, correct me if I'm wrong, Lisa, those were actually like the really small trim size to match the Japanese books.
Yeah, I think they
released them back, I think, a little bit larger than the Japanese ones, because the Japanese ones were even smaller than kind of the standard manga here.
Yeah.
And as you know, we see people ask us, why are light novels today so big? Like, the books themselves are so much larger than manga, and it's literally just because you can't fit as many words in English as you can in Japanese. So unless you want to walk around with a brick the size of, you know, your entire hand, the trim size gets to be bigger.
You got like a pocket Bible of Sword Art Online, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I guess you'd look like a pretty hefty reader, but
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I'm glad you've had some success with it. And you know, since you're publishing a lot of different types of novels, the thing that you're looking for must just be like, this seems like a smart thing to pick up.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's like we have so many options out there, yeah. and people's tastes are, I don't want to say they're necessarily evolving. Tastes are very broad now because the audience yeah. is very broad. The again, people raised on manga versus people who are new to it, a global audience. So it's just kind of like more candy in the candy store to pick from, you know? So if yeah. there's a good franchise, yeah, why not?
Do y'all bid on stuff? Do you have to? Like, are you in competition with, you know, Viz and Kodansha Comics for licenses?
Well, we can't comment on specifics. I can say at least that bidding is a very common part of the licensing process.
Okay.
You know, and some titles will have more competition than others. Some have none at all. So.
Right. Yeah.
It completely varies.
I think the perception is like, well, if it's a Shueisha title, they're just going to hand it to Viz. But that's probably not the case, right?
Well, I mean, yes and no. Like, we can't go into too many details, as like we keep saying.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, a lot of people have asked us that, especially after we announced that we have the license to To Love Ru.
Right.
Which, you know, that's a really big Shueisha title, came from Shonen Jump. And a lot of the stuff falls on sort of the concept of rights of first refusal. Like, if we go to a publisher, they might, in some cases, offer it to their own North American branch already. Like, do you guys want this?
Right, and for whatever reason, and they said no. Okay.
Yeah, and if they said no, then, you know, well, okay, then if you don't want it, maybe we'll give it to yeah. someone else. And that's not the case for all titles, but, you know.
Yeah, totally.
That's kind of what we can answer to people who ask, how do you do this when they own their own publisher?
Yeah, and it introduces a lot of different variable factors there, too, with the first refusal thing, because depending on who's making the decision and what they were thinking about that month, like right. something that might, oh, well, it totally makes sense for them to have licensed that now, but they said no to it 2 years ago, so it fell into our right. hands or whatever, you know? So, yeah, it's there's a lot of different moving parts. Like, that really, I feel like that really puts into relief how unique each license is. And the yeah. variables will be different for every single one, so there's really no good blanket answer for any of that stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, they all have different creators, too.
Yeah, right. You got to go through. Yeah,
yeah. There are a lot of factors, and there are a lot of brains, and there are a lot of opinions. So, and of course, the market is constantly shifting, so
yeah.
there's no one-size-fits-all answer other than we have more opportunities than we really ever did. Which is why it's so exciting and why we've been able to publish so much, because things are good. So
speaking of,
thank you for people buying the books so we can keep doing this.
Yeah. Speaking of dealing with, you know, each manga has a different creator. Are you working directly with Go Nagai at all on your collections of his stuff?
We are not at liberty to discuss.
Okay. All right. Okay, then. All right. I keep asking stuff you can't answer, but, you know.
You know, keep trying, Zach.
I'll keep trying. I'll keep banging my head against this brick wall.
Well, you know, at Seven Seas, we always do pride ourselves on trying to be as open as we can. I mean, you know,
transparency.
We like interacting. Yeah, we like interacting with our fans. We don't want anyone to think we're hiding anything or that we're not, you know, we're a publisher, but, you know, we all came from the same fandom that we're serving now.
Yeah, right.
So we'll answer as much as we can without jeopardizing our ability to keep publishing manga.
Well, let me I got a couple of more here for you before we get to the Twitter questions, but I think they can kind of be boiled down to this. I suppose this question is more for Leanne, but Lisa, if you have a take on it, I'd be happy to hear it. What do you think the biggest challenge facing manga publishers is in right now in 2018 for the rest of the year? Like, what are the big concerns on your plate for the publishing industry right now?
Well, I mean, it sounds really boring, but like, people have to keep buying the books.
Right.
And in the way that kind of the manga bubble burst, the recession was a big part of that, and yeah. distribution was a big part of that. Luckily, those things are better now. You never really know if, you know, God forbid, one of our biggest retailers went under, which is mm-hmm. what happened. Back when Borders went under, that yeah. was like a huge hit to the manga industry. That's where teens went and bought their manga, like all of them, and even Walden Books and stuff. When kids literally could not get access to the books anymore, was mm-hmm. part of when the bubble burst. So yeah. we're hoping that like just people's ability to access these books is always a concern. Luckily, like I said, there's so many factors in play right now that there's less pressure on one individual place to keep it up, because, you know, if one retailer went down, there's still like eight other retailers. If one online retailer went down, there's still a bunch of other online retailers. So it's kind of spread in more baskets. And obviously digital is becoming a bigger piece of the pie too. So as long as people are still willing to pay money for content and they have access to it, which right now both are looking good.
Mm-hmm.
So we want that to kind of keep up. But yeah, I would say I guess a recession would scare me the most if people become unable to buy the books for whatever reason. And like I said, I think distribution is pretty stable now because things are spread out a lot better than they were 10 years ago. But also if people stop having money to buy manga, I mean. Mm-hmm.
Huh. All right.
And I have I have a take.
Go ahead.
Yes.
I would say the biggest issue, and I'd say almost all publishers are fighting right now, is space on bookstore shelves.
Yeah.
Because there's more different titles than ever coming out. You follow websites that just post, here's the new manga out this week.
Mm-hmm.
We're part of a very long list. Every week, new titles.
Yeah.
And bookstores can only physically hold so much. Yeah. And this is why pre-ordering is such a huge deal for books, because it tells retailers what books people want, so they know to buy them to put them on the shelf. And as much as we're seeing big growth on online retailers like Amazon or buying from Barnes & Noble online to have shipped to your house, most manga sales are still done by people physically walking into a store and picking up a book. And if your book is not physically there, it's never going to get bought.
Yeah.
So the biggest competition for manga right now, I'd say, is other manga. So, you know, there's just so much. You really want to stand out, and you want to make sure that you're on that bookstore shelf for the new reader who's maybe never heard of that title before. So part of that is making sure you get the unique titles where a bookstore buyer will be like, hey, I've never seen something like that before. I want to stock it.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, pre-ordering. It might be a title a bookstore owner has never heard of, but if, you know, hundreds of people are ordering it in advance, they're like, this is a big deal. I have to make sure to buy a lot of copies to put on the shelf.
Yeah.
And that means, and then that opens up the door for new readers who have never heard of it to find it. So that's what I see as the biggest issue. And a lot of people kind of, I see rumblings. People are worried that we might be in another manga bubble because there's so much.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's kind of a wait and see. But right now, things feel pretty good, especially with, like Leanne said, just the all the different places you can get material now.
Yeah, it's diversified to the point where, one, it's not, because the manga bubble very much mirrored the anime bubble, where the anime bubble burst was really a retailer going out of business. Like,
right.
One.
Yeah. Right. Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, if Barnes & Noble suddenly announces they're not selling books anymore, you're going to have some manga publishers who are going to be having a pretty bad day.
Well, you have to worry about
predatory. Yeah, now that it was with Borders.
I think with Barnes & Noble, you just have to worry about predatory venture capitalism. But other than that, which is a major concern, don't get me wrong. but I feel like they've closed all the stores they're going to close at this point. At least it feels that way for the time being.
Let's hope so. Yeah. I think that. What's really interesting about Barnes & Noble specifically is they've really expanded their manga offerings.
Right.
For a long
time, it's huge now.
Right. Well, like when I was a tweeny kind of manga reader, Barnes & Noble did not stock nearly the manga that Borders did. Like, again,
yeah,
that's
I remember.
Kind of where people went. And to a lesser extent, Walden Books, but I remember buying a lot from there as well. And then Barnes & Noble now being the biggest kind of book retailer left, fairly recently they expanded their manga section a lot. Like, I feel like it was something like 6 months ago or something. There was like, all of a sudden I was going in, I was like, whoa, did you add like two more shelves to this?
Yeah.
And a lot of them are light novels too. Like the stuff that they're stocking is just a wide variety of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, again, I feel like things are pretty good. Lisa's right that manga competing with other manga is always a concern. And I'm really glad she brought up pre-orders, because a lot of people want to know, oh, I really like this title, how can I support it? And everybody knows, well, buy it.
Yeah.
Is step one. But pre-ordering actually helps it a lot, because it, like Lisa said, then the bookstores will order it and other people will get access to it too. So it's kind of like another version of word of mouth. By you pre-ordering it, you are also adding word of mouth to the bookstores that this is something they should be promoting.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's not like a video game where the pre-ordering is like something that like Electronic Arts is counting on to bring in, you know, X number of hundreds of millions of dollars. Like pre-ordering this kind of stuff is grassroots support. That's how you indicate to the publisher and the store stocking it that you want this thing. It's a pretty important part of the step from what I understand.
Yeah.
All right, man. So we've got some Twitter. We actually got quite a few Twitter questions. So why don't we dive into these? But before we do that, before we started taping, you told me you had a small piece of news.
Yeah, we actually have a license to announce. I know that we're kind of the cornucopia of licenses, but we were saving one for this podcast, and we just got confirmation this morning that we could say it. So it's kind of hot off the presses.
Exciting. What's your license announcement?
The manga is called, the English translation is Tomo-chan is a Girl.
Okay.
In Japanese, it was Tomo-chan wa Onna no Ko by, let me make sure I pronounce this correctly, Fumita Yanagida.
Okay.
This is a romantic comedy, four coma comic about some people wonder what the title, what is it about? It's about a girl and a boy who are best bros, kind of, and, she's in love with him, and he just kind of sees her as one of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
Very charming, very passionate English fan base. We got a lot of requests for this title, so we're really excited to be able to bring it to people, because when we see something is really heavily requested and we can license it, we want to make dreams come true. So we're hoping this one makes a lot of people happy.
We're dedicating this announcement on A&N Cast to Connor. He knows who he is. He used to help us out here at Seven Seas, marketing person at the time. Still does a lot of great promotional work for us as a fan. And this one's for you, Connor.
Good work, Connor.
Exciting. All right. Well, I look forward to reading that. It sounds, you know, there's nothing funnier than unrequited love. So
yeah, it's a classic.
I look forward to checking that out. Okay. All right. Let's get to these Twitter questions. Okay. Right out the gate, I'm just going to condense all of these into one. We did get a fair number of inquiries as to, hey, Seven Seas delays titles frequently. Why is that?
Well, similar to kind of the licensing questions, there are a lot of reasons why a book might be delayed, some of which we have some control over, and some of which we have literally no control over.
Yeah.
That something was, you know, had to be moved. Occasionally, like, we will move things around sometimes if there's an anime debuting, but that's usually, like, I don't know, we would do it sooner. But, yeah, there's a little bit of adjustment that has to happen. As I know a fair number of people know this, but I don't know if everybody does. Bookstores in North America want you to basically plan your books out almost a year in advance. So we plan these things way ahead of time.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, and stuff just kind of changes. So we did have quite a few adjustments very recently that we were kind of adjusting the schedule. And we did a lot of it at once. So I think a lot of people were like, what's going on? Mm. But it was just kind of efficient to do it all at once. And I know we got a lot of questions about Devilman specifically. And this is something that, again, people might know, people might not know. The Crybaby anime was supposed to come out in spring, and that's how Netflix was advertising it. So we were coordinating to come out around the time that the anime would, and then they released it, like, January 5th.
Yep.
Which, on our end, we're like, yay, we get Devilman early! On the other side, we're like, what? So, and when you're that deep in, it's very, you know, you can't change things that have been planned a year in advance. So
the zeitgeist slips through your fingers once more.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is, like,
I'm sure it'll be
Devilman
fine.
Grimoire has been coming out. Yeah, because I know a lot of people are like, why isn't Classic out now? You're missing an opportunity. It's like,
you're not.
We planned this so far in advance. And then, you know, also the Classics collections, like, we're doing a number of them. We really wanted to be able to give them the attention that they needed. And so some of those were delayed because, like, we just really wanted to be as good as possible. And a lot of people are looking forward to them and stuff. And a lot of them are being done, like, kind of together. So it's like we adjusted a bunch of them at once. But again, sometimes there are things that are, like, Netflix is a good example. Sometimes there are things that we don't even know is happening until, like, 2 weeks earlier, and we had nothing to do with. And as a result, things were sort of adjusted. So,
yeah, I don't think you have anything to worry about with the whole, like, oh, it'll be a couple months after the anime came out. I honestly think you would have a reason to be concerned about that if people weren't still going on and on and on and on and on about Devilman Crybaby. But like, that thing was bigger than just flash in the pan popular thing of this season. People will be talking about that for a long, long time. So,
oh yeah,
you know, and it'll come back around at the end of the year for best anime, I'm sure. So, you know,
it was part of like the Gonagai 50th anniversary thing.
Yeah. So. You're fine. I think you're fine. If it had any less of an impact than that, I would say, yeah, I don't know. But no, you're fine. That shit was huge. And
plus,
still
the
is.
The first Devilman book is hardcover and just shy of 700 pages.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's gonna make an impact on that store shelf too.
Oh, that's rad. That is great. I could stop a bullet. Humongous. I'm just gonna wear it on my chest all the time.
And that, you know, we were talking earlier about pre-orders, when people were so excited about Crybaby, and they were disappointed that the classic collection, again, Devilman Grimoire Volume 1 is already out, but that's kind of a modern retelling. The original Gonagai book, the classic collection, when we sort of, people were coming to us, they're like, oh, I want it, why can't I have it? We were like, well, here's a pre-order link, and pre-orders shot up, which again is going to really help the book overall for other people to access it. So
yeah,
if you're frustrated but you can do a pre-order, you're going to help that book do well when it comes out, and you know, we appreciate that. And that's why some people have asked, why do you announce things so far in advance right now? It's like, we really want to be able to get those pre-orders up and get it to as many bookstores as possible by scheduling so far in advance. So we want that accessibility is really important.
Yeah. Cool, man, 700 pages. Now you got me excited.
Yeah.
I wish I... Oh. Why don't I have it right now?
Did we just make the situation worse?
Yes, you did. Okay, Anime Lightweight asks, Seven Seas has released plenty of horny, horny stuff over the years. So what was the reason for separating it into the Ghost Ship line? What determines what titles get published under which imprint? And are there lines of lewdness that either imprint won't cross? So you've boarded all of your horniness onto a single pirate ship and sent it out into the ocean. Why did you do that?
it's actually not quite that simple. It's a new line that we launched. And obviously, like you said, we've been publishing kind of thirsty comics for a long time. And not everything is part of the Ghost Ship line. It's not like it's going to be, oh, everything that's older teen and up goes Ghost Ship versus otherwise. It's something we're kind of playing by ear a little bit. We wanted to do that. And right now we're looking at sort of stuff too. I mean, a lot of the titles that we have, we kind of announced at once or within a short period of time, but the possibilities of the Ghost Ship line are things that we're exploring right now. So why we did it, it kind of gave us a little bit more freedom to separate things a little bit. I mean, like any publisher does an imprint, there are a lot of reasons why you do it, but sometimes it's because like people know a little bit closer what they're going to get. And like, we're going to see.
Right.
Like, we're really excited about it. And the possibilities are kind of endless with it. And I do think that some people, you know, we did some surveys and stuff on this. We were asking, like, you know, if something is adult, is that a draw for you? Or is that something that you don't want? Do you like that being marked? You know, like, do you like having a very easy way to be like, okay, these are the adult titles, these are the non-adult titles? Because personally, as a consumer, I've always really liked that. Like, I want my stuff, you know, I want to kind of know what I'm getting a little bit. And ratings help you for sure. But just knowing that this is kind of the thirsty line, mm-hmm. like that's valuable for me to know that if I want a book like that, like I want a spicy book versus like, no, I'm shopping for my 10-year-old niece. You know, like I should not buy a Ghost Ship title.
Yeah. Gives you a branding opportunity. You know, you can.
Yeah. And we're not a, you know, Lisa, have we ever had an imprint before this?
We had Seven Seas tried some smaller imprints, but it wasn't to this extent. Like we had things like for a while, Yuri had its own imprint name, mm-hmm. but it didn't really work at the time. Ghost Ship is the first like very separate imprint. So like, you know, yeah. like the Shonen Jump to our Viz, so to speak.
Oh, cool. All right. Makes sense.
And something we get asked a lot is people like, you know, is the Ghost Ship line just for Shueisha titles? Because that was the wave of and licenses like To Love Ru and To Love Ru Darkness and Yuna and the Haunted Hot Springs and things like that, that we launched it with. And it's not. At this point in time, it's just Shueisha titles because it was kind of getting that many titles for that audience at one time is kind of what inspired us to create Ghost Ship, especially when under the Seven Seas line, you know, for just having so many more different types of titles, Orange, The Ancient Magus Bride, Lesbian Experience, things like that. So it just felt like the right time to have a separate line. But they're, aside from the fact that they're for older readers, there's nothing specific about it. We could have titles there from any publisher one day if they do that kind of stuff. We could have titles in there that are targeted at women someday. So, yeah. A whole lot of different things we could be doing with Ghost Ship.
You should make the logo a happy ghost pirate eagerly reading ecchi manga. That should be the logo.
Have you seen the logo?
Or a whole crew of pirates, ghost pirates, eagerly reading ecchi manga.
It looks very similar to the Seven Seas logo, except if you look closer, it's got like tattered sails because it's the ghost ship.
Yeah, right. I saw it. It's neat.
Yeah, and we did that because as collectors ourselves, spine consistency drives us bonkers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's so annoying when you buy books and suddenly the design changes.
Mm-hmm.
The Seven Seas from like day one has kind of been like, the spines have to look right. And part of that was we've had the same logo in the same place at the same size for like 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so because our Ghost Ship books are still going to come out the same trim size as our Seven Seas books, and to for a lot of them, a lot of the same audience, we didn't want to ruin their bookshelves. So
it's a
fun new logo that still matches Seven Seas.
You know, I do like Zach's idea of like horny pirates.
Yeah, and if you zoom in really, really close.
Okay, all right. You're like, that's in there. That's in there.
It's delivering the booty.
All right, speaking of which, Snowpal Cartoons wants to know why Made in Abyss is rated for older teens. Was it a request from the manga publisher? I mean, that's an older teen series, isn't it? Isn't there fan service in that thing?
I think it kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, have we read the same book?
That's not for kids.
Yeah.
That's not even for teenagers. Like, I guess it is, but like,
well,
fuck.
The point of Might and Abyss, at least the aesthetic, I really liked that book. But it's about adorable children who look quite a bit younger than they are, but they're still young.
In traumatic situations.
And really dark situations. And I think if they weren't as young as they are or as kind of kiddie looking as they are, it might not have needed that.
Oh, because, totally. Like,
Like if it had been like grown-ups cave diving, like that's one thing. But like kids doing it, like orphan kids who were like literally thrown into the abyss to go like collect stuff and it's their job.
Yeah.
In the orphanage.
And the key art makes it totally look like a kid's show.
Yeah.
Like, because it's just they're like happy explorers. And you're right, like, so all right.
Really important for us to make clear, no, this is not a kid's book, because it would really traumatize some children for sure.
Yeah. God. Yeah. I now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, if I were a parent and had no idea, I would not even blink. I would be like, oh, happy little girl and her funny little robot friend. I'll definitely show this to my child. And then 30 years of therapy later. Okay. We covered that. RCS493 asks, if Average Abilities does well digitally, can we expect more of the J Novel Club model with digital before physical for more Seven Seas light novels?
Lisa, you want to?
Yep. That's a yes and no question. I mean, we're obviously doing this kind of as a bit of an experiment, but it also depends on a lot of factors like can we do the book that early? Everything just kind of aligned with this one that we had it done early. You know, we really enjoyed reading it. So we're like, well, let's plan ahead and try this digital first. And if it does well, then, you know, absolutely, that's something we're going to want to do more. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's something we'll, you know, all of a sudden announce we're doing it for everything, because it's just not feasible.
Right.
Because of the North American book system, and we have to schedule everything over a year in advance, we're not actually working on things the day we announce them.
Right.
So, if it does well, then, you know, absolutely we would like to try it out with some other titles. It just depends on if it's possible, and that depends on the individual book.
Okay. All right. Also from Anime Lightweight, he wants to know how distributing through Diamond has been working out for you.
We've been really happy with Diamond. The Ghost Ship launch was like, to Loveru specifically had a bit of a shaky launch because it was under one ISBN and then it changed. And then a lot of people's pre-orders got canceled on Amazon. And there was a lot of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So that one, but we really can't blame Diamond for that. That was just sort of like a confluence of factors that kind of threw everything off.
Mm-hmm.
since the launch, things have been really smooth. And we, they've been really great to work with. That was another thing that if we did the imprint, we could have a second distributor, to do, you know, just again, explore kind of more avenues, more ways of getting books into people's hands, more ways of, getting the right books into the right people's hands. So yeah, we've been very happy with them. And of course, I mean, we still love Macmillan. We still do use Macmillan for the majority of our books. So I'm very happy to say we have good things to say about both of them.
All right. Excellent. Yeah, a lot of people have not nice comments about Diamond. So a good story is good to hear every now and then.
They've been very, you know, I've had a lot of, like, just on a personal level, I've had a lot of meetings. They are very nice and are constantly trying to help us. And they really, they're really supporting the line and this whole endeavor. So cool. Yeah. So good things for me. You can add that to the pile of, you know,
positive Diamond stories.
Yeah, those in the box.
Friends Franken asks, I love the classic manga boom. Any chance we'll get Ashita no Joe?
We cannot comment on
yeah.
individual titles that.
No, you're supposed to say, yep, we're going to license it tomorrow. All of Ashita no Joe.
Yeah.
You just heard it here, folks. Zach said they're going to license it tomorrow. So look for that from Anime News Network.
Yep, Anime News Network is going to release every single volume of Tomorrow's Joe and somehow stay in business.
Well, you know what? The entire classics line, this is a test. We're doing a lot of them. I mean, we know that there's going to be different reception to different classics because they're for different audiences. They're by different creators. But if people like the classics collections, we really want to encourage them to get them because it's, you know, like we were talking earlier about what is and isn't a risk. I mean, everything's kind of a, you know, sure. like a level of risk involved in everything. But we really kind of went headfirst mm-hmm. on this initiative, and we really believe in it. And we tried to get some of those really archetypal stuff, you know, like Captain Harlock and Devilman being the, I believe those are the first two that we mentioned. And then we've expanded into Claudine by the creator of Rose of Versailles, like really, really important works from the 70s. And then also just things like Record of Lotus War and Dragon Half, stuff that's more recent, but is still kind of archetypal, was really influential at the time. We've also done so many of them as like omnibuses. So we were talking about that Devilman collection and how it's like almost 700 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hardcover. And Lisa, it's $30, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which a is lot of, very cheap for the page count, but
yeah, like we tried to make it so that these are kind of like beautiful and big and fun, but they're also, we wanted them to be reasonably priced. The, you know, you're getting a lot of bang for your buck. So we wanted to make this as easy as possible for people to buy these. Because, of course, we'd love to do more. And when we talk about classic manga, I mean, there's so many things that have never been in America.
Yeah.
That, North America, rather, that I know people would really love to see. And we'd love to do them. So buy them, I guess. Like, I know I keep coming down to that. Please buy your books. And everybody knows that. But we're really keeping a close eye on the classics line. And we really hope people enjoy them because we're really enjoying working on them.
I mean, are those licenses fantastically expensive? Is this like, yo, we're betting the company on it? Like, I surely not, right?
You know, we couldn't answer that even if it was true or false.
He keeps trying these different. I feel like it's a duck and weave with you, Zach.
Yeah, he right.
Enough of them, I'll let slip something really big and.
Ground. Maybe if I throw enough of these at the wall, here's what you need to do. I actually think you someone should do this: is curate a Gonagai art show and sell these books at the art show and have it travel. That I think that needs to happen because it's happened for other it's happened for other big time manga. Well, that's how you get the art world interested in it, and like hipster bookstores and like, you know, outside of like anime press like me, that's how you get those people interested in classic manga, and they take the bait like a lot. Like those places cover classic manga when it comes out because it looks cool and old and like it's obscure and weird, and often it's violent and sexy, which is a huge selling point for a lot of people. I don't have to tell you this. You're a marketing whiz. But I'm just saying that seems like the way to go with him. Like, Gonagai should be as appreciated as, of course, I'm going to blank on his fucking name.
Tezuka?
The artist. He did the cover of Kanye's album, and he had that statue with the guy with the jizz rope.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I can't.
Why am I miss? Why can I? It's like it's not Murakami, is it?
Is it Murakami? The super flat guy?
Yes.
Jizz statue with the cowboy?
Wasn't that him? Murakami.
I'm going to look it up now.
cowboy statue. Yep, My Lonesome Cowboy.
Okay, everybody look up When You Are Not at Work, My Lonesome Cowboy, because that is an amazing statue.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember that? Have you seen that before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, right, yeah.
When it sold for millions of dollars, it hit the news.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even sure I heard about it in the anime sphere. I think I might have heard of it. They're like, there's a jizz cowboy that just sold for such and such $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I see a picture, please? Takashi, tell me more.
Takashi Murakami. You need to market Go Nagai like they market Murakami. And then you'll be gold. Gold, I tell you. All right. Otaku Alchemist wants to know, it's been nearly 2 years since the first volume of Angel Beats, Heaven's Door, came out. Does Seven Seas have plans to release the other volumes?
No comment.
Okay. Petpo wants to know, how's Two Love Rue doing sales-wise?
I guess I can answer that if you want.
Yeah.
It's doing good. Both print and digitally. In print, we're releasing the original series as 2-in-1 omnibus. And in digital, we're releasing them all as singles. And they've been doing well. People... like, there's just so much enthusiasm for these books that I think people have long ago decided was never, ever coming out here. So, yeah, that was one we weren't totally sure, just because it's been so long now. Mm-hmm. But, no, the fan base is still there, and mm-hmm. a lot of people really enjoyed it. I mean, I know I've loved working on the original To Love Rue. It's its own type of nostalgia.
The fan base for that is pretty solid. We do well. Whenever we cover To Love Rue, it does well for us, always. Still, even now.
Yeah, and I think it's going to have a pretty long tail when we talk about sort of sales, because it's only been out like 2 months, and like I said, there was a bit of confusion when it came out. So I think our numbers right now, like Lisa said, they're good, but I also think that they're not even telling the whole story yet, because people still are they needed a little longer to kind of get their hands on it. So I think that as the series continues, and they're both quite long too, mm-hmm. so they're going to be coming out for a very long time. But yeah, we're very happy. Thank you, guys.
K-Possibles wants to know, have you considered releasing any series digital only? Any digital only releases?
We have released one title digital only, and it was called Deadline Summoner, but it was a one-shot by the creator of Monster Musume, Okaido. And we did that because it was a one-shot. It's like one chapter long. Mm-hmm. You couldn't really put it in print. At this time, we're focusing on still on print. I mean, we'd like to have everything both print and digital. But, you know, we're all big print fans. And in terms of, you know, different factors, profitability, what licensors want, what a creator wants, print is still where our focus is.
All right. Golden Geek asks, is Seven Seas still as interested in publishing OEL manga as they once were? For people who don't remember, the term OEL means original English language manga.
Yes, and we actually, just in, I think it was November, we released Hollow Fields in Color, Volume 1, which is an OEL, that we originally published, I believe it was 2007, mm-hmm. and it's color now, and then we re-released it in a really beautiful edition. So we have had an OEL very recently, and I know a lot of people liked Hollow Fields, and if you didn't hear about the color version, I totally recommend you check it out. It is super, super awesome. We've always been interested in OEL, and we're still always interested in OEL. We publish so much out of Japan right now that it's kind of naturally taking a lot of our, you know, our resources, our attention, our promotion. We've always been interested in it, even if our focus kind of changes, you know, our focus waxes and wanes in various places. But OEL is so exciting, you know, like kind of original work that we could work with where it's not going through. We're not licensing it. We're working directly with the creator. And then just you have a global creator making for a global audience or for, you know, somebody making specifically for a Western audience sometimes. Like, the Western audience of people who are raised on manga have different tastes from people in Japan who are raised on manga, have different tastes from people in Southeast Asia who are raised on manga, or South America raised on manga. Like, before Seven Seas, I worked in webcomics for a number of years, and you really start seeing that influence, that the global market and the way that superhero comics, manga, Disney, the way that these things influence styles around the world is just incredible. And also what people are hungry for. Like, it's changing with the new generation, and it's evolving, and it's getting just into this big, beautiful mix of kind of influences. So, yeah, we're always kind of interested in that, even if right now we're doing 10 trillion Japanese manga. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that we really don't close the door on, like, almost anything. We're kind of open to what's cool, you know? Like,
and how many hours are there in the day?
Yeah.
So, yeah,
like, the interest is there. And semi-related to that, we're also coming to the tail end of another one of our experiments with Captive Hearts of Oz, which was a really unique collaboration where we worked with the artist of many of our best-selling Alice in the Country of Hearts manga series to draw and write something original for us. So it was done completely in Japan with the Japanese artist and creator writer, but it was published in print for the first time in English before it was, you know, even now published in Japan. So that was a really interesting, like, directly with the creator collaboration. I guess you could call it an OEL. But
yeah, that's a really good point. I don't know why I didn't think of that one, because, like, Captive Hearts of Oz. So when the Alice in the Country of series, we did, I don't know, 30 books of that or something for a while. And the company, the game company in Japan, publicly went under or shut down operations, I should say. So and those books had done very well for us. They had a really passionate fan base. And then that mangaka, Fujimaru, Mamonosuke Fujimaru sensei. We went to her, and she had that art style. Damn it,
Clark. Sorry.
Like, all of a sudden, it's going off like every 15 freaking minutes.
I like the clock. You should just talk through it. It's fine.
It's a great sound, I have to say.
Is it?
Yeah, it's got some, like, is that ambiance? It's cool.
Yeah, you should just talk through it. It's fine.
All right. Well, now I can't, because it was half a gong. I'm gonna wait.
It will not be.
No, I love the idea that there'll just be an edit, and it just goes halfway through a gong. That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's like, what is happening?
Yeah.
All right, so, pick up from here.
Yeah, we approached Mamonosuke Fujimaru and asked her if she would do something similar. And Wizard of Oz, you know, so in the sense that Alice in the Country of Oz was based on the Alice in Wonderland books, obviously. Wizard of Oz is a uniquely American fairy tale.
And public domain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And something that everybody kind of knows. I think people are more familiar with the movie than the original novels. So some of the stuff in our manga edition, like the shoes are silver, not ruby, things like that. And we did do a lot of stuff directly related to the original novel in it. And we were, you know, we're really excited about this project. It's actually almost over. I think the third volume came out already. But yeah, this was a really technically kind of an OEL, but was really produced in Japan for a Western audience. And specifically to try to give the Alice in the Country of fans and Otome game fans and shoujo fans something that we created for them. So, and it's a really beautiful series. So highly recommend that one.
Cool. Okay, Thundersnapper asks, are you open to picking up more Korean comics in the future? I guess you sort of already answered this. Like, yes, if it's cool enough.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's a market for Korean comics?
The Korean market is, like, over here, you mean?
Yeah, Korean market. The market for Korean comics in America, let's say.
Yes. Korea has done a lot on the webcomics front. So the stuff that Korea is producing has changed a bit in distribution, and then how people are reading. There's always been a market over here for manga, or rather comics that are good from wherever they are. There was definitely more of a push for specifically Korean comics, like 10 years ago, I'd say, might have been kind of the peak of them, where you were seeing really a lot. And they are like Korean publishers, like Net Comics. That are putting out, like, one of my favorite Korean comics of all time is Let Die, which might be super out of print now. I'm not actually sure. I read it a very long time ago. But we've definitely been doing less of it over time. It was never, like, a huge part of what we did. But, again, we did it if it was cool enough. And I think that the market over here, it's a really good question. Because so much has developed on the website of comics out of Korea, and people seeking web comics from Korea. And a lot of them are in really different format. They're like infinite scroll comics. Mm-hmm. They're not like page. So it's kind of complicated.
So they're also, again, like anything else, we kind of look at them the same way we do Japanese manga in, can we work with the licensor? And is it something we really want, in terms of, do we just think it'll sell here? Manhwa from Korea poses also a somewhat unique, I don't know if I'd say problem, but a lot of it is read the way that Western comics are read, as opposed to right to left like manga is. And there's, I guess you could say, kind of a stigma of people who want something specifically manga if they see a book is what they perceive as flipped. Then they flip.
Yeah.
That would never really be, I wouldn't say that's a reason we wouldn't, but like anything else, there's just a lot of factors.
Does this mean you'd have to put a warning page at the beginning of a normal, left to right book? Saying like, okay, now.
Yeah.
Let me explain this to you.
It's kind of a complicated issue. And also, Korea doesn't put out anime franchises the way that Japan does. So some of them have to have, like, knowing that there's an existing audience out there is a little bit harder to gauge, and you're not going to necessarily have the same, promotion of the franchise the way that you would with a manga. But if it's good. So yeah. When you ask about the market for Korean comics over here, that's a really good question, and I'm not really sure, and I'm excited to research it. The web has changed things. Web comics have changed things out of Korea and the way people read Korean comics a lot. So,
all right. Toboggan Hawk wants to know if he's excited about the classic manga releases and wants to know if you've considered Tiger Mask.
I feel like we might have answered a question very similar to this already.
Yeah, we can't comment. We're looking at a lot of stuff, guys.
Yeah, but see, if I ask the question, your answer indicates whether or not you've thought about it. Because I'll get different types of we can't comment on that. Because if you bring up something that the person you're talking to is really excited about, they're like, oh, we can't comment on that. And they're like sly about it, right? But if they're like, we can't comment, then definitely they're not interested.
Well, here's my comment then. We have a list.
Okay.
A mysterious, magical, under lock and key list of titles that we would love to license.
All right.
And I can't tell you what is or isn't on this list.
Okay.
But the list is greatly affected by the results of the classics we currently have.
Okay. So keep
that in mind.
If anyone
wants to ever see those things on this list, I'm not saying we're holding them hostage, but we're holding them hostage. If you want to see what's on the list, please support the current classics.
By Devilman, maybe someday Tiger Mask will be yours.
Says Zach.
So says me. All right. Angel X03 wants to know how Citrus is doing.
Well,
yeah. I think that's always been a pretty good title for us. Correct me if I'm wrong, Elisa.
Oh yeah. It's definitely been one of our top titles for a long while.
Make an impact?
It's definitely had an impact. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some animes come and go and they don't seem to have any impact. But Citrus had a very, noticeable impact. People have seemed pretty happy with the anime and that's resulted in them looking up the manga. So, yep, doing good.
And there's not many Yuri anime out there, period. So getting that kind of visibility in that genre is really important. I know there are a lot of other titles that people are like, oh, I really wanted this Yuri. And it's like, well, now we're starting to see them come out. This was after, NTR is not indicative of a lot of Yuri, but a lot of people really like the comic Kase-san, and it's like the series is called Kase-san and ... because it's like Kase-san in an apron, Kase-san in shortcake. There was an animated music video that came out last year and was released basically on YouTube for that, and they announced that they're going to be doing, I believe it's an OVA sometime in summer 2018. I think it's actually going to be in some Japanese theaters as well, and Kase-san is definitely like Yuri fans, like a lot of them really like that series. Like it's a real crowd pleaser. Like a lot of different kinds of people really like that series because it's so sweet. And it's been something that, we do conventions and social media. People are like, oh, it's the new Kase-san. It just kind of makes everybody happy. So,
yeah.
So it's growing. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right, this question bowled me over because it made me think about it, and it's like, wow, all right. Invalid Name wants to know, do you think Seven Seas would ever publish a monthly anthology like Shonen Jump or the late Shoujo Beat? Would you ever consider the... Yeah, okay. I thought that would be the immediate answer. Like, no.
As the production manager.
No. Yeah. Do you have the staff for that?
Yeah. You know, my job before this as well, I worked at Sparkler Monthly, which is like basically an OEL monthly magazine, kind of digital. It's very different from a traditional print publisher that's, you know, planning things out a year in advance for the book market. Like, it's different. And as many people probably remember, there have been a number of anthologies in English before a lot of them. I mean, Shoujo Beat and Shonen Jump is the only one that kind of still exists. But Yen had one that I think was called Yen Plus.
Right.
And then there was, like, we were talking about Mixed Zine earlier, like Tokyo Pop kind of split into two anthology magazines. Kind of for a while, they were also still magazines. It just had manga in the back. Smile was a shoujo magazine that was so awesome way back in the day. Like, it's been done, and it doesn't really work in English very well. Like, Shonen Jump can kind of sustain it because it's Shonen Jump. But,
well, and they're selling Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I remember that. Like, the
well, that's
the
they still do it.
Shonen Jump. Like, do they still do it?
Yeah,
oh,
they
okay.
still
oh,
put
yeah.
they still put Yu-Gi-Oh cards in Shonen Jump, right?
Oh my actually, god,
they do actually still ship you Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Like, 3 times a year. So
that's one of the main reasons people subscribe is to sell the cards on eBay.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at the price that they sell Shonen Jump, which is the mind-boggling bargain. I can't even fathom how many months we get for that money. And you say send out Yu-Gi-Oh cards? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, if anybody announced a manga anthology right now, I'd be like, it's your funeral.
It's just not... It's not really the way Western manga readers read manga. It might... No. Well, you know what the equivalent of that is, I would say? Is the chapters, like the digital chapters that are coming out.
Yeah.
Like Kodansha USA is doing it. So it's not that nobody's trying something similar, but just saying, oh, let's, you know, and Faku, I believe, too, was doing something with like a whole magazine, you know. It's not that nobody's trying it, but it's just not really, doesn't work that well here. So there's been a lot of duck and weave for that, but it's not really in the cards for us. That's not really how we're structured.
Yeah, plus you'd have to hire a huge amount of people and an entire production apparatus just to get that off the ground, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, Crunchyroll and Funimation doing, like, simulpubs and simuldubs with anime, it's just, it's hard. Yeah,
no, everyone works themselves to death. It's, Yeah,
and if that's not the way people want to read their books, like, why would we do that?
Yeah.
So...
All right. Brainchild asks, the biggest sales surprise you've had in recent years? Like, your biggest number one, like, we didn't think this was going to do crazy, but it went nuts.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I don't think off the top of my head there's one title that everyone unanimously was like, this is not going to do that well. I think, because, I mean...
Then you wouldn't license it, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing that we got and we're like, whoa, totally surprised.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we've got, like, since, the staff all works together on all of our licenses, so there might be some that a particular staffer was like, I don't see that doing that well, guys, and then it blows up. But, yeah, I'm not trying to dodge the question. I just can't think of one that we didn't think would do well and then blew up, because why would we have gotten
it? You didn't expect that kind of attention on Lesbian Experience.
Well, I mean, because also it depends on the context, I guess the timeline. I mean, take Lesbian Experience, for example. We really wanted it to do well. We knew it would at least... We knew it would be very loved by some. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if it would be very loved by a lot. But then after the initial announcement, we were like, okay. Then everyone was kind of on board with, okay, this could be big. Even then, it was a year out until you actually saw real sales results.
Right.
So I don't. And we were confident. We're confident to a point in all our books.
Right.
So yeah, I don't. Yeah.
You know, I Made in Abyss, I would say, was a little bit of a surprise, again, because of the way that the anime came out, and, like, you know, that book just came out last week, and people are super passionate about it, which is wonderful. And that one was, I don't think any of us really knew if the anime was going to be that big.
Yeah.
Just, oh, there's an anime. Because, again, we really didn't know much about it. I know also I'd heard, because this was before my time, but there's a manga called My Girlfriend is a T-Rex, mm-hmm. which I think was a little bit of a... Who knows? How this is gonna,
an example of one where the staff was probably split 50-50. Half of them were like, it's going to be big. And the other half were like, no way, it's too weird. and it did very well. So,
Yeah, I feel like you can't really get weird enough. Like, these days, like, the weirder it is, and so long as you have a title that just explains the weird premise, you're good.
Yeah, like, a good catchy title can help a lot of those things. But other than that, a lot of it is just kind of, you know, fan base. Like, because, like Lisa had said, we knew My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness was going to sell pretty well because of the Twitter explosion that happened when we announced it. So that one, we kind of had some lead time being like, okay, there's clearly interest. And then, yeah, some of the kind of offbeat titles doing well, that's always really satisfying.
Yeah.
When something that you like and you're like, this might be too weird, or it just might kind of slip through the cracks, or, you know.
Man, I just came up with a really great idea for one. I was sitting here thinking, like, well, what would be a title that you would immediately pick up? And it's like, well, what about, like, I can't believe I'm making alimony payments to my ex-wife, a velociraptor. You would license that right away.
I would personally read that immediately.
Yes.
Oh, actually.
You can't get weird enough. Anyway, go on.
I'm going to take this opportunity then to promo one of our books that I read like yesterday and it blew my mind. We have a comic coming out called Giant Spider and Me, A Post-Apocalyptic Tale.
Okay.
Please read this manga.
All right.
It's like a combination of a food manga, a pet manga, and a post-apocalyptic manga about a little girl and a giant, assumedly radioactive, whatever, spider in the mountains, like, after the apocalypse, having tea parties. And it is a freaking delight.
That sounds really interesting.
It's so good, Zach. Like, seriously, I was flipping through it. I'm like, what? Oh, God, this is so good.
Because they really give you recipes for the food
that
actually be capable of making.
Yes, but it also has a nonverbal giant spider dipping its little legs, tentacles, no, not tentacles, antennae, kind of like into cafe latte and being like, slip, slip, slip.
That's pretty good.
And just skittering around constantly. And like his entire body is kind of covered in flowers. Like it's so charming, Zach. I strongly recommend people check out this manga because it just charmed the hell out of me.
What's the title one more time?
Giant Spider and Me, A Post-Apocalyptic Tale. It actually comes out in, like, really soon. Like,
okay, cool.
February.
People's responses to that on social media are great because spiders in themselves enact a lot of reactions.
Yes.
Yeah, that had a huge reaction. It was evenly split between I need this manga right now and Burn It With Fire.
Mm. And the funny thing is the Burn It With Fire people also buy it.
I would like to think this would make them like spiders.
Yeah. You
know? It's definitely one of those, oh, you don't like spiders? How about this spider, though?
Okay, the rest of this stuff is largely questions about licenses you can't announce. But briefly, our interest feed editor, Lindsay, asked, she says, I'm sure you can't tell us, but pretty much any time you have a new wave of announcements of manga without anime adaptations, the anime is then announced a few months later. And she was just wondering if you know this stuff is in the works when licensing, but earlier you mentioned frequently you don't.
Yeah, in almost every case.
Almost every case. Has there been a case where you're like, okay, there's an anime coming that no one knows about yet, so we're going to license this? You don't have to say which, but has it ever happened?
I think it's happened where we've licensed a manga and then we're told after the fact, they're like, oh, since you already have this, we'll let you know an anime is coming. Oh. But they didn't tell us before. It's kind of like need to know. It's like, you already have it, so we'll tell you.
You think they would have told you that ahead of time to drive up the price?
Well, maybe they didn't know at the time.
Yeah.
Because we're not privy to anything that happens on their side.
Right.
Right. And also, like, if that's information you really don't want to be leaked.
Mm. Because if you don't buy it, then...
Right. Like, we're not necessarily a big leak risk, I would like to think. You know, like, we're professional about it, but...
Who knows?
Sometimes, they're under very strict rules, and yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a mystery to us sometimes.
Okay, guys. That is the last of our Twitter questions, and I guess that wraps up the show. It's been a delight sitting here talking to the two of you. As always, thank you so much for coming by and answering all of these questions, even though, you know, you couldn't answer all of them, but you did your best. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us on.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Leanne and Lisa for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio. Oh, I got it right. I didn't say Stitcher Play Music this time. YouTube, please call Leanne and